You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Tuesday, joining me from great state of Texas is Michael Musselman. Gunner, what's up this morning?
What's going on, Matt?
Oh, we got a little gun talk.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, a little gun talk. Hold on. I saved this. I saw this morning on Marine Corps Times. Marine snipers are getting new Mark 13 rifles. The Corps is replacing the Vietnam-era M40s for sniper teams.
Watch. They're doing it?
That's what the
Are you sure?
Marine Corps snipers have been carrying some version of the M40 rifle since the Vietnam War, but now the Corps is about to arm its snipers with a new weapon system. Marine snipers will soon be carrying the Mark 13 Mod 7 sniper rifle, according to Marine spokesman Captain Christopher Harrison, confirmed for Marine Corps Times on Monday.
Good for them.
Why?
Oh, because the Mark 13 Mod 7 is a Accuracy International AX chassis system. Really good rifle. Very, very modular. You know, you can swap out the breech and the barrel and then put it right back on the chassis for different calibers, as long as it's going to be a short stroke because it's 308. So, yeah, that's a great system, man. Great system.
So
I'm really impressed.
You're fired up about that?
Yeah, I think it's a really cool move for them to do that. I was always, you know, I liked the whole M40 reason why we built it, but in today's technology and everything else, in today's days, it came out to, and I know it's crazy to talk about this again, but it came out to money, you know, and where people used to, with people and say, you know how much a pistol costs or a sniper rifle costs? And they go, oh, it's about, you know, $4,000. And I said, no, if you buy it right off the shelf, the problem comes out is it's not that much money, because here's why. PWC, Precision Weapons Shop, or I don't know what the hell it used to stand for. Anyway, it's a building in Quantico.
Systems.
It's a building in Quantico in Weapons Training Battalion that Will, when he was there, and the COs have little. They own the people that work there, but they and the maintenance and everything else. But that's about it. You know, it's that whole like what? because they build weapons for the teams, the snipers,
right.
And they did build for handguns, but then that was a total buffoonery, and we lost our ass in that one. But
okay, hold on. When you say the teams, what do you mean when you say the teams?
Oh, the pistol and rifle team.
Okay.
But then when you look at cost to run that thing, it was millions of dollars, you know, every year. And that was just in, you know, maintenance cost or building costs, Milcon. You know, and it was a CNC place, so it had blooming. I mean, there was a ton of money going into that thing.
What is What is a CNC place?
CNC.
Oh, CMC, Commandant of the Marine Corps?
No, CNC, like a milling. They mill out aluminum and steel. You know, a machine. Yeah, makes parts for, it can make a lower or a frame of a gun.
Okay.
Slide.
Got it.
So when you tallied all of that up and then the number, because of the money we invested into PWS, you know, that money's got to be counted, you know, in the actual production of the rifle. People used to leave that out. Go, no. Don't add that money. Well, no. That money we spend to keep that business open to build the guns, it's called a business model, you idiots.
How do you not include that in the cost of the weapon?
Because it did look good.
Oops. I hate when that happens.
And the difference in the business model, Mac, is, you know, It's taxpayer money. It's not private money. It's not like you make a bad investment, you lose your ass. You just get more money. That was the problem with that place, and that's the problem I didn't have. I didn't like it because it wasn't run with a smart business model. People can't put that together. And I say, you know how I know this? And they're like, why? Because you're still there. Because if this was actually a real business and someone came in here and said, all right, what is our cost to stay alive? It's $20 million. Okay, what do we provide? We make, 400 widgets. Okay, what else? Oh, that's it. What are you saying? We're paying $20 million to keep this business alive, and you're only producing 400 widgets? Yes. And you're saying the widgets cost $3,000? Yes. You're all fired. It was just ludicrous.
Right.
So I'm glad to see this stepping out of there and getting away from this. We don't have to do it. It's nice. It's a nice to have. It's great. Yes. But when industry can pump out something for, 10 times or less of the cost, then why? And this was the sniper rifle idea. Why? Just let them build it, and then pay for it. Hopefully we don't have to pay $454 million for a maintenance contract.
All right. So it doesn't say. Well, hold on.
No, there's a maintenance contract, man. There's got to be.
All right. I want to ask you about this, and then we'll go to maybe there's some specifications relative to the contract. Pictures have appeared online that show Marines firing the Mark 13 with a Night Force ATACR scope. The new scope comes with Horus Tremor 3 reticle. The reticle allows the operator to rapidly engage targets at long range. It features special wind dots that aid a shooter in quick wind estimations.
Right.
According to one sniper interviewed, that the new scope is even more exciting than the Mark 13. Explain the scope to us.
So the scope, that's hard to explain. You'd have to look at it. But I'm glad that they went with that. We tried to get the Tremor. Well, back then it was Tremor, and then it was Tremor 2, and now it's Tremor 3. We tried to get that reticle in the guns because it's very intuitive. Now, when you look through it, an average person look through it, and you're like, oh, my God, because there's lines everywhere. It looks like an upside-down Christmas tree, right? So I'm sorry, a Christmas tree. So if you look at it, there'd be steady lines all over the place. So everything means something. So once you learn how to read wind and then you know the range, you can put the lead already on and then fire. And it's a great system. I have Tremor 2s on some of my guns. But it's a great, man, it's a fantastic. Now, the Night Force is kind of like, that's kind of the, really? I didn't, okay. Well, I mean, good for them. Good for them.
When you say Night Force, what's the difference?
That's the company.
Okay.
Night Force is the company.
Okay, got it. Documents for justification of the fiscal 20-year 18 annual defense legislation include nearly $4.3 million in funding for the rifle. The Marine Corps plans to purchase $4.3 million. The Marine Corps plans to purchase 356 rifles. All right, let's
see. Yeah, we didn't have a lot. I think we were managing 400
let's
at PWS.
All right, so 4,300,000 divided by 356 equals $12,078.65 a weapon.
So then, market wise, if you were to buy that gun off the shelf right now, it's a $6,000 gun. So we're paying double. And then we probably get a 10-year. That's not bad.
Whoa. You know, the Marine Corps seems to
do this.
The Marine Corps seemed, and you and I talked about this last week, they were taking a lot of grief from Congress about the M27 buy, and, you know, that American manufacturers can't produce it, and you were talking about simply the cost. The cost and the time, you know, it doesn't work like that, you know?
Right.
And so
it's. And you got to go prove it. It's proven. I mean, you can't take a gamble, man. You can't allow.
But Mike, you know, those politicians know that. They're just playing out in front of the camera, right? That's just a game.
Oh yeah. They know.
I've got to do this because I've got this company in my state and they make this component for Remington. So if I don't blast you, then I can't go home. So you're going to get blasted today. And then they shake hands. Hey, it's not personal. Like, no problem.
No problem.
I'll job.
Let me take you out to dinner.
I'll sit there and take the pay shot.
Let me take out to dinner and pay it with my government credit card and taxpayers will pick up the bill.
There you go. It all works. It all works. Another story that's kind of interesting in the news today, and that is sailors got in trouble with the Romanian police over a bar tab dispute.
Hmm?
Yeah. That doesn't sound like anything you've never been a part of, does it?
No, I've never, ever.
Ever been part of a bar tab dispute in a foreign country?
No, I've never been a part of a bar tab dispute. I mean, I paid all my bar tabs.
Romanian police have questioned 7 U.S. Navy sailors based in Romania over an altercation in a bar and fined 5 of them. Police spokeswoman Mihaela Gerg says officers were called after the sailors left the bar in southern Romania where they allegedly refused to pay for drinks early Sunday morning. That means late Saturday night. Gerg said Monday the Americans were noisy and measures were taken to calm the tense situation. The sailors are based at the U.S. missile defense site in southern Romania town of Devișelu. A local policeman said 5 sailors were collectively fined $874.
Really?
So have you, do you never had any incident in bars overseas where, because things can get pretty shady when they think you're drunk and they start padding the bill and you don't really know what color money to give them and you would not be the first guy to be ripped off like that.
No, I never put myself in a situation like that, really.
Really? Even Lance Corporal Musselman was smarter than that?
Yeah. No, I never did that, man.
Wow. You were wise beyond your years.
Yeah, I just didn't trust the people, man.
Yeah, it is. Let me tell you, what was the first big foreign libo that you ever went on?
Oh, the first time ever was Olongapo. Yeah, talk about being thrown to the wolves, man.
Eden Prairie to Olongapo, no problem.
Yeah, that was pretty freaking crazy, man.
Describe Olongapo.
That would be like plucking you out of a village tribe in the high mountains of Afghanistan, where all you've known is there's 30 people in the world. That's all you've known. And they take you, whisk you away in the night, and they drop you off in the middle of Disney World.
Yeah, no, not Disney World, Las Vegas.
Yeah, even then, yeah.
More appropriate. Describe Olongapo. Close your eyes. You come off the naval base, right?
Yeah, shit river.
You go over shit. So yeah, describe. This is just so... I had heard a lot about the Philippines. I had been to Okinawa. I had been out in Kinville. You know, I'd been to Korea. And I had never been to the Philippines until I got on the aircraft carrier. So we head to the Philippines. We were supposed to be there for 5 days. And because of a typhoon, we had to go to sea. So we were only there for 2. So I went out because first of all, tired of being on the ship. I didn't want to stay on base, so... But it's a little weird when you're a Marine officer on a naval ship. There's not another Marine officer unless you want to go out with your CO. And, you know, and you do that because there's no other Marine officers. And unless there's a Marine Corps squadron aboard the ship, and you can go out with those guys. You do. You start to leave the base, and there's this bridge that goes across, what Mike said, Shit River. Describe the scene at Shit River, Mike.
It's a river that goes underneath the bridge, and then in there there's these dugout canoes where the Shit River princesses are standing up in like prom dresses, and the little kid paddling the boat has got a little school mask on, and he collects the pesos that you're throwing down.
Yeah, so you throw pesos in the water into this river that has raw sewage in it, and they go dive for the pesos.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it starts. And then describe the scene as you go out into a longapo.
That's crazy, man. I mean, it's just a bunch of little bars and dance clubs where people are, you know, local girls are off dancing. And they're trying to get your business, man. They got guys out there that are, you know, their primary job is to get you in. So they're offering you drink coupons or whatever. It's insane.
Yeah, and you go, and then you walk into one of the places, and you've got strippers. In Thailand, you have kickboxing and stripping going on simultaneously. That place is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look, and you're like, what is going on? You have strippers, and then you have prostitutes that are working in the bar, and you have now what were you doing there?
On a Mao when I first got out there.
And so Mao has how many thousand Marines and sailors were in that thing?
Oh shit, I didn't know. A lot. We had five ships back then in a
Yes.
Amphibious task force.
Probably between 7,000 and 10,000 people. And these bars all know, they could tell you more about the movements of the Pacific Fleet than the Russians or the Chinese could. And so they have their staffed appropriately because they're gonna make money, and they know that it's probably been a month maybe since this Mao, you know, last saw liberty, and so they know these guys are gonna get off with all this money. And they're going to look for some place to spend it, and that's what this thing is. It's Las Vegas gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just crazy. Absolutely crazy. And so then you see all these scams. One of my Marines got, one of the girls, what they do is they sit and talk to you, and you buy them drinks. And the drinks are not cheap, right, Mike? They're expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Buy her Coke, $8.
What?
And then, so she's a prostitute. And so then what'll happen is the Marine pays her bar fine. And then he has her for either a series of hours or the rest of the night, depending on how much he pays. And mm-hmm. That's the world of a longapo. And, this one story, this Marine's name was Johnny Beddington. He's 5'4", little badass from Connecticut. His nickname, Johnny B. Good. So he's coming back to the ship because we're leaving within, I don't know, 24 hours. And so she knows this. And so she says, Johnny B., you buy me drink. He's like, nah, I got no money. I'm looking for Earhart. He's got my ID. I need it to get back on the ship. She stands up and gets his way and pushes him, and he just puts his hand on her and pushes her kind of aside. Well, she then does this fainting act, right, and falls over a table. And classic line I've never forgotten since then. This is 1987. Beddington, all 5'4", this sailor stands up who is drinking with this girl who's like 6'3", and looks at Beddington and says, I'll kick your ass. And Beddington looks up at him and says, I'm not afraid of you, man. I've had my ass kicked by guys bigger than you. Come on. And so it motivated Johnny Beddington. But anyway, she takes him. This is the whole shakedown. She files charges of assault against him. They come to the gate, right? We've got to appear at the police station the next night, and he's either got to pay $400 to settle, quote-unquote, out of court at the police station, or he's got to stay there on legal hold.
Right.
This is the world that you go out into. And so that's why the bar fine, the bar store in Romania made me think of those kind of things. Where there's military people, you know, it's not where, what are those cruise boats called? Carnival cruises? We don't pull into the same section of the pier.
Mm-mm.
We are down in
the... We're in the shady sheet part, yeah.
In the industrial, you would not even drive down to most of these places. And that's where we are.
Right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, no, I remember going to Thailand. You walk into a bar, and it's the same kind of crazy Pattaya Beach. We pull into the port, or the area, there was no dock, so you just moored out in the harbor, and they sent those Bonka boats out to the ship. So we're pulling in, and there's topless girls on jet skis, and we've been at sea for 3 months and 2 weeks. We went to the IO and we stayed there, and when we didn't leave, and we didn't have a port call, nothing, for the majority of the time that we were out there. And so you have all these Marines and sailors like on the manning the rail, and these girls, these topless girls on jet skis, you know, come to Gunnar Musselman's tavern. You know, like, what? I know I'm going there. Like, well, I don't know who Gunnar Musselman is, but I'm in his tavern tonight. And so it was crazy. Then you walk in, and now you've got kickboxing. So you're betting on kickboxing, right? And then there's strippers going over there, and it's a long way from Eden Prairie, yes?
Oh, yeah. It's a completely different world.
I was telling the story about kissing the royal baby in the Shell Crossing because my cousin asked me on Sunday about it. She said, I was on a boat in, I think she was off Malaysia, and my cousin Amy said something like, and they did all this crazy stuff when we crossed the equator. She said, Michael, did you do anything like that? He said, a little bit. And so I tell the story about kissing the royal baby. And my sister's looking at me, Peggy. She says, I don't even think I know who you are, or something like that. Like, you did that? I said, I had to. What was I going
to
do?
Yeah, you had to partake in this festivity.
Yeah, was I going to be a punk and not kiss the royal baby? And then I described it. Mike... Yeah, the royal baby. He's a guy sitting there with no shirt on. He's the fattest guy on the ship with a baby bonnet on, with a bucket of gruel underneath his gut, and he's scooping it out and swirling on his gut, and you crawl.
Lard. It was lard.
You crawl up with the summons in your face, and you're like, oh, and he grabs you by the head, and he goes, come here, kiss the baby.
Nasty.
Were you a Lance Corporal when you did that?
I was a private when I first did it.
Nice. How about that? How about that whole gong show? That was, and you know what? What a fun day. You know, and now
it was a fun day.
We don't do it anymore because of the hazing thing and all that. But I will tell you what, it was straight up hilarious. Hilarious.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You crawl out on your hands and on an aircraft carrier, you crawl out to the aircraft elevator, you know, you get to the hangar bay, you're on your hands and knees, they make you crawl out to the aircraft elevator, and you go up to the flight deck on the aircraft elevator. It's like, well.
Yeah, and then there's a series of events taking place.
And it is hilarious. And the other thing was, you know, before you left, you know, they held a contest to see who would be Aphrodite, because if you were a WOG and you were and if you got to be Aphrodite, you didn't have to go through the ceremony.
Yeah, but back then, the guys that won that were the Filipino guys, because they dressed up and they looked just like a girl.
No, ours was a white guy, and he was smoking. Oh. He was smoking hot.
Ours were Filipinos.
Yeah, the Filipinos. I don't want to say they have a history of that, but they What's the street? Masaysay Street in Manila? Where they have
Masaysay.
Where they have these are the things that Marines know. Where they have what is the parade? The parade is a transvestite parade or what?
They call them Benny Boys.
Dressed up as girls. That's right. These are all the things you learn in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, join the Marine Corps. This is under the heading of see the world. That's what they mean with that phrase, see the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, we're not talking to go in and seeing the temples in Bangkok, okay? We're talking about strip joints everywhere and all kinds of fun.
Pure craziness. Man.
Did you ever go see that parade on Masaysay Street?
No, I don't. I know what you're talking about, but I wasn't there for it.
Yeah, I never saw it either. I'm probably like Mike. I'm more of a watcher than a doer.
A participator, yeah.
Yeah, that stuff was crazy. So, anyway, another story in the news. These stories are always heart touching, I think. Marine Corps PFC Lyle Sharpillos is coming home. Sharpillos 19 died on November 20th, 1943, the first day of the Battle of Bashio Island on the Tarawa Atoll. He had been assigned to Fox Company, 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines, 2nd Marine Division. His remains were identified using DNA analysis after being disinterred in 2016 from the National Memorial Cemetery in the Pacific in Hawaii. This happens now on a continuing basis. Because of DNA,
technology is being identifying these guys.
Yeah, all these were brought back from islands like Tarawa and different islands around the Pacific and buried as unknowns at the Punch Bowl in Pearl Harbor in Hawaii.
Yeah,
and they disinterred. I want to say in 2016, I want to say 400. Of them, and they thought that they would be able to. They were like 95% sure they would be able to identify these guys. So, interesting stuff. So it's always cool to see that their descendants get honored, and in this case, the Marine Corps will roll out its
pageant. It's final closure, you know,
for them. Missing is just such a shitty. Such a shitty label that, we never recovered his remains. And, so it's interesting. The, email. What was the most fun Liberty place? And I don't mean fun in terms of sex or anything like that, but what place did either one of you go on Liberty that you enjoyed the most? Kind of an interesting question, Mike.
Mine was Australia because they were just great people, and getting out, looking at the country, all the scuba diving that I was doing, that was just a blast, man. I had a really good time.
When you say Australia, what city did you go to? More than one cities or?
Yeah, well, that time we were down in Perth and Fremantle.
Wow.
On the western side of Australia.
Right.
So I did a lot of diving down there. I saw my first great white shark in the water.
What was that like?
Yeah, it was, it's that first time you see something like that, you just like, for goodness sakes, you know. But then it wears off, and then you're kind of more of like intrigued.
What? How close were you to the great white shark? And like, there's no guarantee, and you weren't in a cage. You're not a cage diver kind of the dude.
Well, it didn't even cross my mind that they were in the water down there. And so, I saw it. It took me a minute because I saw it, and then I had to do a double take, and then a double take again. And then I looked over at someone else, kind of confirm it, and then they were, you could see in their eyes, like, holy shit. And it just swam away from us. It was probably about 20, 30 feet away. It just kept swimming. and it was pretty cool.
He didn't come after you. Did you see? Didn't you and I talk about once where the orca killed the great white, and then all the great whites left and went to Hawaii?
Yeah.
You and I were talking about that once, right? Yeah, it's really. Yep. Where did we see that show? Is that a National Geographic thing?
Yeah, it was.
And it's on whales, though. It's not on great whites, isn't it? Or is it about great whites?
No, I think it was just talking about predators, at sea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, and they have, like, now homing devices on these, so many of them. And they, literally, they said, well, where did all the sharks go? Because they noticed that they were gone. So it's kind of interesting little story. The, I'll tell you, the favorite city that I went to, and I'd go back there again today, was Hong Kong. Hong Kong is a lot like, in my opinion, like San Francisco and New York City. Beautiful, high rises, old culture from when the Brits settled it and, was part of the British Empire. So many people speak English that it's easy to get around
right.
You go off the beaten path by a block or two and you see stuff that is so, you know, you see the open air markets that have been there forever and the way the Chinese have existed. So Hong Kong to me,
Singapore was a lot like that too though.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you, the places that the Brits settled, Shanghai, Singapore, down the coast and in towards the Indian Ocean, were the places I was in Singapore and I was in Hong Kong. The Brits knew how to make money, man. They knew how to organize that stuff and all that. And the cities are beautiful, colonial, English architecture, imperial architecture. Very, very cool stuff. Very, very cool stuff. But Hong Kong is, to me, the prettiest place and the most fun place. Again, because a lot of people speak English, so you can get around. Not that you can't get around if they don't, but it's certainly easier when they do. You can read the signs and all the rest of that stuff. So
yeah, that does make it a little easier.
so it certainly helps. I'm trying to think. What the most beautiful place you were ever at, Mike?
Place?
The most picturesque.
So you pulled into Liberty.
Were you ever pulled into Liberty?
I think it was probably probably Mar del Plata in Argentina.
Yeah, Mike did some Mike had a couple Libo cruises. You know, the one with the Kitty Hawk. That's the one you that's the one you want to be on where they have to make the transit. That's an awesome cruise. But when they come out of
Slept. Yeah, because we pulled into Santiago was remarkable in Chile.
Wow, listen to that. Yeah, places you would never go there. What happens is aircraft carriers, the Kitty Hawk and the Ranger, both went into what's called SLEP, Service Life Extension Program. And they go to Philadelphia for what, Mike, a couple years?
Yeah, it was there for a long time.
Yeah, and then, but when they come out and you're a part of the ship's company, they're West Coast carriers based out of San Diego, and they've got to get to the West Coast. That means you go on the Libo cruise from hell. Yeah.
And we're too big to go through the canal, so.
Perfect. Let's stop at all those great. And otherwise, you would never go there. You would never get a chance to go there.
It was like we did the Caribbean island stop. And there's the difference. Well, that cruise, we were pulling in to where the cruise ships were.
Yeah, we never do that.
Yeah, that was the cool thing about that cruise, man. Everywhere we went, there were cruise ships. Buenos Aires. Well, we didn't pull all the way up. We didn't go up the river, but we took a train and stuff, went up there. But Mar del Plata was gorgeous. Santiago was gorgeous. And then, it was fantastic, man. It was the coolest thing ever.
I would have to say that Hong Kong was the prettiest city because the other places that I, you know, as a, on a ship, Sasebo, Japan, not very attractive. There was protest.
No, it's an industrial area.
Yeah, there's
a shipbuilding place.
Yeah, there's protesters because they said you have nuclear weapons on the ship, and so there were protesters. Like they were across the entryway of the harbor, and the Japanese Coast Guard, they smoked them with a water cannon. Yeah, knocked people in the water. Yeah, knocked people in the water. It was like, whoa, check it out. So Sasebo sucked. Padilla Beach was beautiful, but you know we were moored out in the harbor, got on Bonka boats and went ashore. But it's not picturesque. I mean,
it's like a higher class along the boat. I mean, it still had the same crap.
Yeah. So then you had the Philippines. Singapore's pretty, but it's not as pretty as Hong Kong. Hong Kong is, it goes from water to mountains, like in a very, I don't know what the period, the space is, but it's.
I don't know. Singapore to me was a lot of fun because it was, I mean, the city is a real modern city, but it's right in the jungle. So, I mean, at the edge of the city, you're looking in the jungle.
Yeah, but do you remember the limo brief you got when you went to Singapore?
Yeah, well, Singapore is very clean, very respectful, very law-abiding.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, it's like, you spit on the sidewalk, you're going to jail.
Yeah, that's so you get these State Department people that fly out and say, okay, here's a limo brief. Okay, first of all, don't show your shoes to people. Like, what? Yeah, if you show your shoes.
Don't do anything stupid.
Yeah, don't spit your gum on the ground.
What do you mean by stupid? Just don't be an American.
That's the truth, man. It's the truth. And so Singapore, and that's the place where that's the place where they caned that dude. We just lost Mike. That's the place. Remember that kid that got caned? He got caned in Singapore.
Well, that was weird.
Why are you hanging up on me? Oh, you switched cell towers. No, do you remember though that kid got caned in Singapore? What did he do?
He
was spray painting graffiti, and they were gonna. And I don't. Did he ever get caned? I don't know if he ever did.
I don't
did.
Remember.
But remember, it was a big deal. They were gonna beat his ass as well. He deserved it. So, yeah, Singapore. But if you go to Hong Kong, you know, you as you drive into Hong Kong, there's all these islands, and then you get near the city, and. And you see all these beautiful, huge high rises, and very cool, very cool. And so
yeah, it is.
Yeah, so and there's old historic districts, and then it's it goes to mountains, like right above the city. And in fact, I'm looking at it right now on Google Earth, from the water's edge to the mountains that overlook the city is 1 mile. So these mountains overlook. Wow. Yeah, it's beautiful. So it's a beautiful place. So.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
and, it's Kowloon. Kowloon is on the other side.
Yes.
And so I didn't spend a lot of time in Hong Kong. I was in Kowloon, which was the other side, because that's mainland.
Well, I think that's where I was, too. We tied up, right? There's a pier. Right, and then you would take the shuttle.
Yeah, we tied up in Hong Kong at the Navy Pier, and then you take the boat to ferry across.
That's what we did
to Kowloon. Kowloon had more stuff going on.
Yeah, that's where I got lost, and ate like dog on a stick or something like that. But you tied up at the pier, and then the British Embassy or something was down there because the Brits were down there, and then you went to the harbor terminal. And you took a harbor, the ferry right across. And I was there over Christmas. And they had Santa Claus, like, on all these high rises across where Kowloon is. There's all these high rises. And they had lights on them. All these Christmas lights, American, like, Santa Claus shit. I was like, whoa, I didn't know that Chinese had Santa Claus, too. So, and then you got closer, and they were put up with all this bamboo scaffolding that went like 6, 7, 8 stories high.
Right.
Bamboo, for those of you who don't know, that's some serious strong shit. And the Chinese.
Oh, yeah. Scaffolding out of bamboo, yeah.
Yeah, and it's with leather and metal clasps. this scaffolding gets held together. And you look at it like, you gotta
right.
be kidding me. But, and then I'll tell you what, one of the things I'll never forget is walking around and looking at the Christmas lights. You rarely saw young couples together. You saw families together.
Right.
Grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, the kids, then boyfriends and girlfriends. They were walking around in groups of like 10, 12, 15. And that's how they did it. So, yeah, it's very cool. But I would say, yeah, that's we did the same thing. Tied up on Hong Kong and then went across on the ferry. And then what happened to me was I got on the ferry and it hung a right. I was like, whoa. And then it hung a right and it went and it, I don't know, it put in someplace around to the left. I said, oh, I'll just walk back. Yeah, and that's when I ate the dog on the stick. That's one of the best things I've ever eaten. So, anyway. All right, where are you headed? You going to lunch?
Yeah, I'm meeting Kelly and Pam. They're the ones that run the classes for the women. So they want to talk about what's going on, what's next, what do we want to do next.
Tell Kelly and what's the other one?
Pam.
Tell Kelly and Pam they need to come on All Marine Radio and talk about your class one day for a few minutes.
Yeah, we can do that.
No, I'd love to get their perspective on learning weapons and what they would tell other women.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Actually, that'd be great.
Yeah. All right, man. Have a good lunch.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
There you have it. Bye. There you have it. The one and only Mr. Texas himself, Michael Musselman. That'll do it on a Tuesday. I'm waiting to hear back. I'm kind of excited. I'm waiting to hear back from Stephen Foley. What a cool guy. Email. I sit here and laugh when you guys start telling Libo stories. And unlike Gunner and you, Mac, I was a part of a few disputes over bar tab. I am not proud. Of that. Although I do think the bar was just as much his fault as we were. They were trying to overcharge us in our drunken stupor. We were trying to ditch. That's why if it had just been a reasonable bill, we would have paid it. In retrospect, it was a lesson well learned in life. We did get in trouble, though. It happens. It's growing up. Yeah, can you imagine? You're 18 or 19 in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. You get taken and dropped off in the middle of the Philippines. You have all these wholesome, good American boys. Oh, my God, this is awful. Here's some Ohio man. Me too, 1983, 19 years old, by myself, crossed shit river, more like a creek, made the mistake of stopping and looking around. I wanted to buy a transistor radio. Local dude spots me, asks me what I'm looking for. I tell him. He takes me by the arms, leads me down a street about 150 feet, and points to a shop. I said, thanks. He said he wanted some exorbitant fee for guide service. I refused. He gets irate, grabs a local cop who was not my friend. I ended up giving him around $1.50 in pesos to go away. Lesson learned, Cherry Boy. and that's like one of the more inexpensive lessons that you learn over there. Yeah, well, I don't know if I should tell the story. Ohio man says Patty Beach made a Longapo seem tame. I don't know. To me, a Longapo was crazy. But the kickboxing was pretty amusing. Yeah, you could go in and see stuff in bars that you would, first of all, you'd never see. Kind of carnival acts kind of stuff. Along with kickboxing, people getting drunk. And then the difference between, in my opinion, the difference in the Longapo in the Philippines, it was mostly military people, right? In Padilla Beach, you had European tourists there, and which gave it a little bit different flavor. Yeah, a little bit different flavor. Libo. Yeah, that's a... So when you see that phrase, see the world, that's code. That means go to crazy places that have crazy bars and see some of the things you've heard guys say. That's that. All that is code and see the world. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take a quick break. This program resumes momentarily. We'll, if you missed the first part of the program, you will do some news headlines, talk a little bit about websites. Yeah, if you haven't seen our new website, it actually, I think it looks great. And most importantly for me, as I said, if you look at the front page on your, if you look at the front page on your desktop browser, it looks awesome. Getting that to fold into a cell phone is a little bit more challenging, but it communicates what we're about. And if you look at it for 15 seconds, so I just saw the Commandant of the Marine Corps. I see Jeremiah Workman. I see Charlie Niemeyer. I see John Allen. I see two Sergeant Majors, Wayne Bell, Brian Zickafoos. I see them. And now I see Barney Barnum. I see the Commandant and Carl Marlanis. Like, I don't know what this program is, but I might want to check it out after I see that. Bing West just showed up. Tony Zinni just showed up. And Eric Smith, Commanding General of the 1st Marine Division. So, yeah, I mean, that's been 2 years in the making. I have to thank my guy, Scott McNamee, Grand Forks, North Dakota. And, so, yeah, if you're looking for a website guy, my guy's awesome. My guy's awesome. And this is a great little setup. So anyway, and then, like I said, you do the podcast page. And if you're on your desktop computer and the shows from today will populate in the next hour or so. But they pop up right at the top of the screen. Russia. Smaller not only than Canada, but South Korea. They did beat Australia, though. Congratulations. And Spain. So if you were to group Russia, they would be in a group most closely associated with South Korea, Australia, Spain, and Mexico. Yeah. That's Russia. Not so much. All right. We're going to take a quick break. I have to save a show, and then you'll hear it momentarily. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow.